Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anna's Owl Ministries podcast.
If everything is permitted, then what do we fight against? This is Systematic Ecology. We are the Priests of the Geeks. As we're continuing on through our Finding the Good series, today we're going to be doing Assassins versus Templars and Assassin's Creed. And we have three people here. Of course, myself, your host, Christian, actually joined by my favorite trauma abuse victim, John Erdley. How's it going, John?
It's going great, Christian. I'm glad to be here. Hopefully I don't have too many word salads and make too big of a fool myself today.
And that's going to be really hard to do because like the last time that I was on a Finding a Good episode, TJ played the role of the person who's like, yeah, okay. John will also be playing that role today, but he's not alone. Someone who's played a little more, though, is, of course, your favorite host, the host of the most, the one who puts us all to shame, TJ Blackwell. How's it going, TJ?
Good.
Oh, of course. Monosyllabic as ever. Just the way we prefer it.
One word response.
Right. So, gentlemen. What have you been geeking out on recently?
Well, I just finished the live-action series on HBO Max, the His Dark Materials, which is based on The Golden Compass by Philip Pullman, which is one of my childhood favorites. And I just finished the series on HBO Max. I have to say, they did the books justice. I mean, you know, whatever you think of the books, however you land on the spectrum, they did the series very well. I was very happy with it. I give that a solid like 9 out of 10. That was fabulous. I mean,
okay.
I just enjoyed every minute of it. I liked seeing a lot of the scenes in the book that I had from my memory because I haven't read the books, you know, in a decade or so, but I had some of the scenes still in my head. So when I was watching the series and I actually was able to be like, that's it. That's the scene I was thinking of just a little bit ago. And I was happy to see it put on the screen faithfully.
I'm glad that turned out well. It's one of those... I remember it exists and then I don't. So eventually I'm going to watch it. And now definitely based on your recommendation, I was like, okay. Yeah, I definitely have to look at it. TJ, how about you?
I recently finally caved. I started getting into Final Fantasy 14. So my first real crack at an MMO.
Quit you out of Nazi, my poor friend.
Yeah. Well, you know, I played Wizard 101, of course. I played Star Wars The Old Republic a little. I just could never... really get into it, but I'm like level 48. Been playing since the day before Thanksgiving. At the time, that was what, a week ago? Maybe a week and a half?
Okay.
Time is a mystery to me. But yeah, it's Final Fantasy 14.
Starting an MMO, yeah.
It's Final Fantasy 14. It's great. I'm actually having a lot of fun. Mostly because I can be a dragoon. Like my goat, Kane, from Final Fantasy IV. So, I'm having fun.
Yeah, it's not my thing, but I'm really glad you can get into it. I just have bad memories of losing like two friends for like 6 months back in the day because that's pretty much all they did. It's like, oh, you still exist.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely part.
I was like, wow. And trying to remember the other big one. Was it League of Heroes or League of Legends?
Yeah, that's a whole different beast. I'm not touching that ever.
Yeah, different type of game. Yeah, way more toxic. Myself, I just finished You Like It Darker, which is one of the newest Stephen King short story collections. It's not his best. It's not his worst. But for the most part, I enjoyed it. Could probably give it a 7 out of 10. It was enjoyable. So
With that in mind, gentlemen, we are going to be discussing Assassin's Creed and the Assassins versus Templar conflict that happens in here. If you follow these episodes, you kind of know how this is going to go. We're going to pick a side. We're going to explain what each side does. We're going to have to defend the other side. So Assassins versus Templars is the main focus here. But before we get that way, guys, when did you get into the games? How did you do that?
And correct me if I'm wrong, but it came out in what, 07, practically right after the Xbox 360 came out. So I played it first when it came out on the Xbox 360. So it brings back a lot of nostalgia for me to talk about the Assassin's Creed games. I mean, bear in mind, I've only played number one, so forgive me that I haven't dove deep into the series. I own a copy of Black Flag, and I am going to play that, but I haven't got to it yet. I've got a huge backlog of games I need to play, and it doesn't help that I just bought one of those modded systems that has like hundreds of games on it. So
oh, yeah.
I'm just screwing myself for the future. But anyway, let me do the math. Scroll the wheel down, 1991. Though I was 16 when it came out.
Okay.
So back in the day.
Back in the day, you know. I didn't plan on the release because I was 8. But
everybody did games for TJ at 8.
Yeah. But I think I was in middle school. I was spending a lot of time at other friends' houses who did have systems and games. I really didn't as much, but they had games that were fun that they had already played that I hadn't. But, I'd borrow them. And Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, AC2 Brotherhood was one of those. So that was my first one. And that was in 2012, somewhere around there. And I, was glued to it. And then, played Assassin's Creed 2 and 1. I can't remember. What the other Revelations, 3, 4, fell off when it got a little action RPG, like most people. But that sweet spot of Brotherhood to 4 was amazing.
Yeah, and I do want to put a little caveat here, real quick, before we go any further. There are dozens of games in the timeline here. We're not going to be covering every single one. We're not going to mention every single one. We're going to do our best to include as many as possible here. But if we don't feature your special favorite game, it's not because we hate it. It's because we didn't think it relevant. We didn't think about it in the moment. So that out of the way.
Because I hate it.
It is because TJ hates it. And if TJ hates it, he must be right.
Yeah.
So feel free to take it personal if we don't mention the game.
Yeah. But that is exactly the purpose of why I said what I said. I got into them fairly late. I knew they existed. I remember seeing trailers for the original game and definitely saw more over the years. I definitely remember, French Revolution? I can't remember off the top of my head. Unity. Yeah, I think I remember seeing a trailer for that one at some point in time, but it was just, I never got into them. And the major reason for that was poorness. And growing up, yeah. On a high school teacher's salary, it was pretty much if he decided to buy a game or if you managed to convince him, my dad would buy it. Or maybe you got lucky and a relative for Christmas would buy you a game. That's kind of where I stood because, once again, high school teacher's salary. And, teachers don't get paid what they should, but that's a side issue. So it was after college, after several years after college, I remember just on a whim, there was a sale on and I picked up Odyssey. And I'm fairly certain that was my first one. In the sands of time, just aging really bad. But I'm fairly certain I started there. And yeah, that is more on the more action RPG side of things compared to the other games where they're more stealth-based, way more ways to fail. It's not as big for a more general audience as they later decided to do with it. And I appreciate both sides for what they do. I'm more of an RPG guy anyway, so it was a good thing I started there. But you know what? There's plenty of great things in the earlier games too that are a lot of fun to play. And then from there, I went to Origins and then pretty much would go back a game because I was always fearful of, oh no, if I don't like the quality of life stuff that is in this game and it's not in that game, well, I hate the rest of it. And eventually just got all the way to the beginning because I mean, might as well at this point in time. So, guys, can we explain to the audience that they've never experienced an Assassin's Creed game, what the main conflict is between our heroes, allegedly, the assassins who we typically play as, and then the Templars, who are most of the time their villains outside of the games that obviously go beyond in the past when the Templars didn't exist?
So the simplest way to put it I can think of is imagine the Illuminati is real and effective in real life. And there is another group of people who just pretty much tries to kill them. That's it. At like a very, very basic level, that's what this conflict is. Yeah.
Okay. John?
I was going to add that, I mean, that's a really great, simple explanation. I think there's a little bit more nuance because they introduce like relics in like in the first game, there's relics and different type of powers that they give to the users, and in the battle between the assassins and the Templars is kind of control of the relics and the secret mysteries of the age, and it kind of goes back and forth between modern day and historical for the same reasons from the ancestors of the original assassins and the Templars to the modern day descendants of the assassins and Templars, and the conflict continues.
So essentially, we have in these two various groups, you have the assassins who are more freedom-based and people need to make their own decisions. And you have the Templars who are like, no, we can't trust human beings to do the jobs that we want them to do. So we need to have someone in control of them who can tell them, hey, like, this is the right way to do things, and we need to be the ones in control, because the fewer people in control of stuff like this mean that we can trust them and get stuff like that done. And then the assassins are like, no, you're just enforcing, you know, kind of fascistic kind of ideals on people. And there are points on each side, and we'll get to that in a moment. And along the way, we find that the Templars weren't the only other people who have had this point of view across history. We'll get to that in a second. But in the present, they have started a company called Abstergo, which has created a device known as the Animus. And its goal is you can, through genetic memory of your timeline, ancestors, you can look at what they did, what they experienced. And from the first game on, that's kind of the thing. And then we learn that other people are more a little tied in because of their genetics, and they can have more people that would have access to actually, you know, seeing their memories for. And what Abstergo is doing this for is to unlock those memories of where certain relics, these pieces of Eden, were cast away or put aside by people lost to history, so that they can then take them and then enforce their rule over the world. And the assassins, they've almost wiped them out at the present time when these games first came out. And there's only like a little select few left. Your main character eventually joins them and fights against Abstergo, and you gain some other allies along the way. You know, his story is told, then he's gone. Then you get, what's the other? It's Desmond Miles and Layla Hussein, I think, is our new viewpoint character after that. And seeing her go through everything.
Yeah.
I think all the guys, well, Desmond.
That's the best.
Yeah. Anyways. So, yeah. You see, one side, order, other side, more anarchic freedom. That's how we're going to be going about this. So, gentlemen, it is actually no. Before that, there are other groups that exist beforehand. We have assassin-like entities from the time of ancient Greece, started by Alexios. But also, we have Bayek and his wife Aya. Yeah, I think Aya is his wife's name. Who start their own kind of assassins group around the time of Julius Caesar in about 44 BC, I'm pretty sure. I'd have to look that up again. But they've been confronting a group known as the Order of the Ancients. Alexios in Greece, well, Cassandra is canonically the one, but you actually look at the numbers of who played who, people chose Alexios. They fought against the Cult of the Cosmos, which wanted to control the Grecian world, the Mediterranean. The Order of the Ancients was originally created by a pharaoh to find pieces of Eden and utilize technology for their own. So this is not a new thing in the world, obviously, with retcons and new games, they make more stuff. And I should also say real quick, I'm two games behind. I have not played Mirage and I have not played Shadows yet because, once again, money. So when they decide to go on sale for really, really cheap, I think I'll get them. But for right now, no.
Shadows?
Yeah, okay. So moving on from there. How is it?
Well, with Game Pass, you can get like the Ubisoft Play or whatever they call it, and you play them all. So if you're quick about it, you can pay for Game Pass for a month and, you know, play both for $30.
Fair enough.
Thank you all so much for your time listening to this episode. If you want to help sponsor our show, but you can't quite do the membership thing, commit to that once a month payment, good news, you can leave a donation on our Fourth Wall website. You also can get some free content over there. So if you don't have the money for the membership, but you still want to hear some of the extras and bonuses we do over on Fourth Wall, there's an option for that. If you want to support the show without that commitment every month, again, you can donate over there. Every little bit helps. You know, our show has a lot of needs when it comes to equipment, when it comes to going to some of the events we want to go to, advertising, getting the word out about our show. It takes a lot, and we really appreciate each and every person who's able to help us do it, even if it's something free, just like the free membership or leaving a rate and review on our site. Every little bit helps. Your time listening to this helps, and we appreciate all of you. We're so proud of the community we formed over at Systematic Ecology, and we're very happy and we're proud that you're a part of it. Thank you so much for your time and for being a part of this community.
All right, so we have our two sides here. Which one are you guys going to be picking? Assassins or Templars?
Yeah, I will. What are you picking, Christian?
I'm picking the Templars.
Okay, I thought so. Yeah, I'm going to go with Assassins. Freak.
John, you're a tiebreaker.
Oh, good gracious. Based on my experience only in the first game, considering the main character is basically betrayed and used by his own order to wipe out all the opposition. Like, I mean, I hate that. I like the assassin as the character, but I wish he was a Templar at the time. So I would have to pick Templar for the first game because the big whammy at the end just kind of ruins it for me.
Okay. My real answer is both sides suck, and I'd make my own third party. I'd make my AU. I'd make my three-ship alliance. Of course. You know what? We're not in Gundam anymore. We're a different series, so I have to pick between these two, and I'm picking Templars. So, TJ, why did you pick the Assassins?
Freedom.
Freedom?
Freedom.
That's it?
That's what Luffy would want me to do.
Mm. You know what? I think that's extremely fair.
Yeah.
I hate that. It doesn't really require that much more explanation. Okay. Anything else you want to add?
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that help? Also, shout out to One Piece for, it's not happening yet, but season one, as it were, is finally going to be over for One Piece because next year it's going to be seasonal.
Yep.
So season one. You know, 1150 something episodes. Season two is how
great run
26.
Oh, are you watching it or are you talking about the remake thing?
Well, both. They're not doing the what they've been doing. You know, side tangent on the conversation here of where they would just keep releasing episodes. Back in the day, that's just what you did. Now they've said, nope, we're catching up too quickly to the manga. It's like we're tired of doing this. Let's just release seasonally, like, you know, 25, 26 episodes. During the different cores. And they're also going to be doing the remake, as it were, starting from the very beginning. So get back on track. John, why did you pick the Templars? Why did you join the winning team?
Well, as I do love the Assassins for, like he said, the freedom, but the Templars, again, is like an idealistic kind of a group where they actually have kind of like a holy-based type of organization that, of course, you know, it doesn't function the way it should, but if it did, it would be kind of nice. But again, the betrayal at the end by the assassin's leader is what really did me in, and I just really hate the leader of the assassin. So despite him, I picked the Templars.
John carrying a grudge for like 20 years. I love it. Well, almost 20 years. Yeah. Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I'm picking the Templars because Let me preface this. To an extent, I agree with their philosophy. When I am up against a group that, you know, has, you know, the lovely catchphrase of, you know, everything is permitted. What's the rest of it? Everything is permitted. Nothing is true. Everything is permitted. So as someone who believes that there are things who are objectively true and not everything should be permitted, that goes against my entire ethos. And on what you get on the assassin side of things, you tend to get more humanistic leanings. And I'm about as far from a humanist as you can get before you start getting a little crazy. I don't believe that man is inherently good. I believe the exact opposite. Yeah. So on the Templars, I see the reasoning behind what they do. The idea of humans can't be trusted with this because you see what we do when given power and responsibility. Time and time again, we fail not only ourselves, but the people around us. So why don't we get people who are on the same page and can work together to try and work for the benefit of everyone? Now, as the games show, this isn't always the case. There's always going to be someone who tries and takes advantage of the situation. But there are other people who are legitimately trying to do this for the betterment of others. But that's one of the good things about the series is that not all Templars are bad. Not all assassins are good. There is some little gray in between there you can pick. So now, since we've decided who we want to be, why don't we go ahead and defend the other side? John, why don't you go first this time? Go ahead and defend those filthy assassins.
The filthy assassins. Like the premise of the first game where Altair was, if I pronounced that correctly, give me a star. But
yeah, close enough.
He's kind of on a quest for redemption, which was completely bogus because the dude was betraying him the whole time. But he was getting back into the order. He's like getting back in with the boys. He's completing quests and he thinks he's doing the right thing. But moreover, they have their own little kind of thing going. Like they have their own little almost like castle kingdom kind of. Or like little order of fraternal kind of going on. And that's always kind of cool. Reminds me of Ra's al Ghul or the
League of Shadows.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. And I guess I defend that where it's just like, you know what? You could be a really cool assassin dude, you know, and obey the order. And they're like a very tight-knit group with a very strict code.
It's like some kind of brotherhood.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. TJ, defend your opposite, please.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I definitely understand the like good points of the Templars. You know, some people shouldn't be, you know, in certain situations. Say it that way. I just can't agree with them, but I do understand the desire to, you know, have the authority to be like, hey, we're not going to do that, you know, for the betterment of the country. We're not going to allow that. So it's not unreasonable. Like if I needed to support the Templars, I could, I just can't. Man should be free.
Okay. Yeah. Great points read by both of you. Me, when it comes to this, I get the idealism behind the assassins' actual creed and what they do. The idea of people should be able to make their own decisions. You know, we've got to trust people. And, you know, there's a naivete to that, but there's also something that does want better for others and wants to believe that humans can be a little better than who we are. And there's something very admirable about that. I would still argue it's ultimately naive in the same way that I would argue the Templars are too hard for their own good. They're not as smart as I think they are. They're too prideful sometimes for their own good. And that's one thing, one reason why the assassins needed to be around is because some Templars took things way too far in their effort to gain control. And as a result of that, lives were lost that didn't need to be lost. They would cause different conflicts across the series. You know, you got the 7 Years' War, the Revolutionary War, and beyond the French Revolution itself. Just as you know, three examples of people thinking that they're better than everyone else, deciding this is better for the world if we do this. And that's ultimately why, yeah, I picked them as my side, but I'm still not 100% with them. For the Templars, because I don't trust people. I don't even trust the smartest people in the room to all make a decision to come together and say, yes, this is for the betterment of everyone. I like the ideal behind it once again. I think it's less naive than everything is permissible, but there's still a huge problem there, which the assassins have a great point when they bring up why Templars do what they do and how it harms people, whether they think it's going to do that or not. All right. So moving on from there, Do you guys have any favorite characters from either side or both sides of the conflict that kind of click with you?
Well, if I remember correctly, Robert, the main Templar villain dude, is the one who exposed his order's master as the great betrayer. And then I'm just like, I kind of just feel bad for it. It's just like, so he killed all these 9 people, you know, and it was all based on kind of the lie. And it's just, it's one of those plots that makes me think about it. I'm just like, dang, he completed all those quests and killed all those people. And it feels like it's all for nothing.
Yeah. It's tough being like heavily invested into a character who just gets betrayed at the very end of the game. But Altair is still awesome. That's what matters.
Okay. All right. Anyone else you guys want to pick?
Definitely. I think pretty much every character in Assassin's Creed 3 was phenomenal. Connor and Haytham Kenway, both. So good. So good. To have the, like, your assassin and the main Templar be father and son. What a good choice. Which also allows Desmond to play as both of them. It's so good.
Extremely useful. I mean, that's a great reveal too.
Yeah, spoiler alert for this game.
I mean, in 3, because you think, I mean, why wouldn't you think that you'd be starting off as anything other than, you know, the protagonist?
Yeah.
For a game that's enough, what?
Oh, well, because Haytham uses a hidden blade. He has the assassin's blade.
And turns out, no, he's actually on the Templar side, and he's just pretending to do all these things that would be a very assassiny. So you can rat out their enemies and, you know, fathering Connor and being like your big bad dad. That is a very Vader and Luke kind of situation there. That's a great one. Because Connor is Connor's a great choice because you've got the whole thing of him being mixed heritage in a time where, well, that wasn't really looked out very favorably. And yet at the same time, he believes in ideals and freedoms that are being espoused by the revolution and wanting to see justice done, but also being a child of two worlds, literally in, you know, his racial background, but also a Templar and assassin background, and having his dad fighting against him. Yeah, he's one of my picks for sure. I'm also, you go ahead.
Well, Ezio and Altair, obviously, both deserve their flowers. Yeah. Great characters. I think Ezio is better. But then also Edward Kenway. The pirate.
Black Flag.
Yeah. So good.
Oh, what a tragic end to a story, man.
They're going
to
remake it.
Have your own. Yeah. I did see that. And lose your son like that and have him become a Templar. Oh. After all the work you did, the cruelty. What keeps it from being like a downer ending is, like, you know, that Assassin's Creed 3, you played that first, unless you did it the way I did.
And yeah, I was going to say, that was probably really good for you because you got to know Edward and then you met Haytham.
You know, things work out. It's fine. I'm also Dark Horse pick. I'm throwing out Alfred the Great from Valhalla. He is presumably the one in charge of the Order of the Ancients that are working in that, as, you know, Ivor is becoming this assassin-esque character. And he doesn't really create like an organization or anything like that during the game, but like he's fighting against who are essentially the Templars of his time. But Alfred the Great, you find out, despises the order because it goes against his Christian beliefs. And we'll get into how that kind of plays later on in the series, because there's some major reveals that are made that kind of put that into doubt. But like for him, God is the only one worthy of any of this. So he has used you to get rid of the order so that he doesn't have to be under his influence and he doesn't have to worry about it anymore. And because he values his relationship with God that much, it's like, man, I don't even know if I want to kill you. Despite everything that happened as a result of this, you're just that smart of a man and you have a very good reason for why you did what you did.
Yeah, I'd kill him anyway.
I don't know. Do you even have the option? It's been a while since I played.
I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe you do have to do it. I'd have to look it up again or replay it. But you know what? I'm not replaying Valhalla. I serve my time. It's fun, but that is like the definition of bloat.
Yeah.
So I might just watch a cutscene.
I'm not a fan of that whole era. So,
yep. Okay. So do we have a favorite game in the series? John, I know your answer, but I want to hear what you have to say about your favorite and only game in the series.
Well, I mean, I really do look forward to playing Black Flag because it's got pirate ships and sea shanties and stuff, and that'll be a lot of fun. But seeing as number one's the only game I played, it has to be my favorite by proxy. I enjoyed it, especially in the original Xbox 360 era when open world games were just first starting out, really. Like, Oblivion came out as a launch title, and that blew my mind. And then when Assassin's Creed came out and you could explore and run around and hop up and look at the vistas and the views of the cities and the different locations you could go to, and they were all kind of historical, so you kind of almost got a little bit of a history lesson. I know it's like historical fiction, but you know, it's still, you know, it challenges you to think about these ancient cities and you know, do your own research, or at least for me. I mean, other people might just enjoy the killing and the action and stuff, but for me it was really cathartic. Kind of it was a lot of fun to be able to explore an open world in a historical fictional setting that was pretty, because Xbox 360 was the new generation, it boasted the new graphics, and it was just blowing our minds because we grew up with the Nintendo 64 PS2 era. So when the Xbox 360 came out and those graphics, they were mind blowing at the time, and they're still good. They still hold up.
Yeah.
So PS2 though, to be fair, PS2 games that like leaned into the style, they still look great.
Yeah. I mean, you can't beat some of the RPGs like Sly Cooper and some stylistic games on PS2. They still hold up too, but you know, there's other games that.
Yeah, not so much.
But you raised a good point there, John, that, you know, Ubisoft, for all their many, many flaws, they do care about the history to an extent here. I mean, yeah, they're making up stuff, but they have very, you know, optional parts where you can actually explore the history behind, you know, you find this temple or you end up at this specific location and they'll say, hey, this is what it was used for. It was devoted to this god or whatever, or this happened in X year. And this is why this thing is important. And I love that. I mean, as someone who loves history, loves learning, I mean, to learn while you're playing a game while I'm also trying to murder people, it is fun.
Yeah, it's really awesome. Whether you're getting to know, you know, Da Vinci, or was it Michelangelo?
Both?
Both.
It's been a while.
Ben Franklin. Like, it's really cool to have a series that is historical fiction that isn't like way over the top, you know. You should play Assassin's Creed 3 too, because just them being like, hey, it's Boston Massacre time. It's really funny.
You get to be in the middle of it.
From my perspective, it's really funny. It's like, oh, we're doing the Boston Massacre. Okay, cool. But wow. It's cool. And what they need to do, instead of like leaning into this whole RPG thing like they've done already, and it is too late, but what they should have done is to bring it more into the modern era, and could have had a game where we just play as Desmond, is team up with Tom Clancy Studios.
Yeah. I see the appeal.
Yeah.
Okay.
You see where I'm going with that?
Yeah.
Would have been phenomenal. Because they do like the asymmetrical multiplayer thing, and they have since Chaos Theory. But, like, they know how to do it. It'd be so easy for Tom Clancy to take the Assassin's and the Templars and turn it into, like, a great live-service Assassin's Creed game.
So, getting back to the question, TJ, what's your favorite? Four? Black Flag?
Yeah, three and four. Hard to pick. I love the ocean. I love pirates. I love boats and sharks, but it's really hard for me because three is awesome. And I think it's just a little bit deeper than four. Four lost a couple of the things from like the homestead, you know, replaced it with the ships, which is reasonable, understandable. I do like the ships. I like ship combat. It did also have that a little bit in three, but
yes,
it's a lot better in four.
It's a little jankier in three, but you know, they were figuring it out.
Yeah.
But it's been a staple of most games since then.
Yeah. The homestead in three felt so cool. They just decided to borrow like some city building aspects. And I was like, here, you're going to build a real homestead, like huge estate.
I don't know, do side quests for some of the characters there.
Yeah, it was so engaging.
Yeah.
And then there's Brotherhood and Revelations. They're all phenomenal. But gun to my head, I'd probably say 4.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm also going to answer Black Flag. This one is like, man, because I always had that fear. If I kept going back, it was just going to be worse. It was just going to be terrible. And I wasn't going to be, because I didn't grow up with it, I wasn't going to have as big of appreciation for it before. It was like, I'll just keep going. Like, yeah, it won't be the same because obviously, you know, game graphics improve and AI improves and stuff like that. But no, this is super fun. All the ship combat you can do there. Yeah, other games had it and I played them. But you could tell like, oh, they put a lot of love and care into this. And I enjoy what they're doing. And, you know, the tragedy of what happens there. The writing is pretty good for that one. I'd say 3 probably has better writing overall. But yeah, I mean, the connection, when you see the connective tissue between them, it's like, man, okay, this is definitely like a duology for them. Yeah. Okay. So as mentioned previously, the main conflict between the two factions is the struggle between freedom and control. So what points do both sides make about this, about why they're right, and what do we think about them? We brought up before, that we haven't brought up before.
Yeah, I feel like we pretty much covered this, more or less.
I feel like I don't need to super, oh, killing people's bad, but like the assassins wouldn't have to exist if the Templars didn't. And I do understand they want to control like these super powerful relics, but, you know? The assassins could just kill the people who try to abuse the relics. Or like rehab them or whatever is correct. They wouldn't be able to call themselves assassins though.
John, anything you want to add?
I was going to say the Templars is kind of like the Jedi Order all over again, where it's, you know, in general, you know, it's based on, you know, good ideas and there's ideals that they should be following. But of course, you know, some people are going to be ignorant. Some people are going to be corrupt. Some people are going to want to use the relics for themselves, you know, but in general, you know, the Jedi were trying to do the right thing. And I feel like the Templars are kind of, not a perfect analogy, but they're kind of doing the same thing. They have an idealistic kind of at least a positive sort of view, kind of like police.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. They both have a solid foundation to where you could see why you would pick either side and think that you'd be in the right to do so. Well, the main issue is, once again, that it relies on people not being themselves. It revolves around people, you know, denying themselves their sin, denying themselves their goals and arrogance and pride and self-preservation and looking out for the people that you say you care about. And I say that as someone who is, you know, attempting to work in the church, you know, under the role of a leader there, like as an ideal, that's a naivete I'm going to have to bring to myself too, in that, hey, churches aren't perfect either. They are filled with people who by very definition are not perfect, and they're expecting you to show them what to do. And the goal is that we trust one another to work as much in harmony as we can, as unified as we can, to get stuff done, to make sure people are being discipled well, looked after in the community and beyond. And yeah, like there is to someone like me, who's very, once again, that as far away as you get from a humanist as possible, I still have to believe, if I want to work in an organization like this, that there is hope. And that's something I've had to work on for multiple years, because my natural instinct is to say, no, it's impossible. And like, well, yeah, it's impossible. But I also, I mean, not to make get too Jesus Juki here, I do believe, you know, in the God who changes people and makes them a little better than who they were, despite our sin, despite who we are as fallen people. So like, I get it. The idea of we're right because of this. Yeah. Everyone thinks they're right. And these two organizations think they're right. But we see throughout the games, there are many flaws, despite, you know, it taking more often than not the assassin side, because it's Assassin's Creed is the name of the title, but still at the same time is willing to say they're not perfect either, because humans are flawed. And I think if we took that a little more in our everyday lives, not to say like, I want you to be cynical as possible and say, well, they're just going to fail me. It's like, no, humans are flawed. So they can make stupid decisions, but they can also make really great decisions. And so part of that is we have to trust people and also be prepared for when that trust is broken.
Yeah. Well, it's not unreasonable to have that viewpoint and be on Templar's side.
They kill people, though.
Innocent.
Well, speaking of killing people, like...
Howdy, guys. I really hate to interrupt, but my name's TJ, and I'm here to tell you about our new merch. We have incredible new stuff with Fourth Wall. We have just partnered with them as a new store. They have a lot more to offer, which means we have a lot more to offer. We can now offer you beautiful Comfort Colors t-shirts. They're so comfy. I wear mine all the time. And we've got it all now. Cups, hats, backpacks, pajamas. If you want your Systematic Geekology pajamas, you know where to go. My personal favorite is actually our Throne of Geeks shirt. It is Comfort Colors, you know, blue, black, green, red, orange. And the shirts are just so nice. And the shirt itself, we've got the Throne of Iron geeked out. Because, you know, that's our brand. We've got Mjolnir on there, the Buster Sword, Trident. Basically just the coolest weapons from our favorite properties are on the shirt instead of a bunch of normal boring swords from the boring series Game of Thrones. So check that out and thank you.
Is assassination ever a valid method of dealing with a problem? And of course, the problem being a human being.
Yes.
Okay, how so?
Sometimes
your favorite assassination happens.
Oh, Shinzo Abe, number one.
No.
The doohickey. Hold on. I have a list. I'm not going to go with the rest of the list.
Okay. Yeah. Better off.
But no. Morally, no. Realistically, maybe so. You know,
John.
And I don't bet Shinzo Abe needed to be assassinated. Just the way that it happened was crazy.
This is your first episode. That's just TJ being TJ.
Yeah. If you haven't seen the Shinzo Abe doohickey, if you look up those words exactly, you'll see what I'm talking about.
John.
But it was nuts. At the risk of, you know, NSA listening in on our podcast, is assassination ever, you know, valid? And that always, it just begs the question, it's human nature. It's kingdoms rising and falling. It's someone's so corrupt that they just got to go. And do the ends justify the means? It's like the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill. But then God tells his people to go kill some people. You know, it's
thou shalt not murder.
Thou shalt not murder. Okay. I mean, I guess you're right. But you know what I mean? Thing. It's almost a catch 22, but it's like, yes, but no. And yes.
Okay.
Yes. Free Luigi.
Mandione.
I knew that was going to come up. Okay. So this is not an easy question to answer. And if you think it's an easy question to answer, we have a problem. Because you can say, oh, yeah, all killing is wrong. Well, no. You can also say, well, if the government doesn't, it's okay. And we have that, whoa. We have two separate opinions there. Not right on either side. But no. I believe there is a way to do this correctly, and it requires much of oversight in a way that does not exist, shall we say, for the CIA or anyone involved in extracurricular activities like that. And that, yeah, you know what? For a greater good could be achieved if we, you know, take the head off of this snake, wherever that snake is, and, you know, cause maybe some infighting in this group to where they're not as capable of leading themselves and causing harm to others. Sure. So yeah, we can organize, say, a drone strike on this Al-Qaeda leader or ISIS leader or something like that to make sure that they can't cause further harm. But you're also taking a human life there. And I do believe it's a justified way to do that, but you also have to make sure that you're doing it in a way that only takes down who you want to take down, which can get very indiscriminate if your morals are way down. And I'm not going to solve this in the span of a single conversation, but that's where I kind of land. It's like, yes, it can be, but you better make sure you're right.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan, obviously, of the U.S. military way of getting that done sometimes. But I do think it's really funny to be like, hey, we built the new bomb and he's in that building probably. Just remove that building.
which has happened a few times over the past few years. And I don't think that's targeted enough to be an assassination.
And that's a call that I think that pretty much every president knows. I mean, even Clinton made some, Bush made some, Obama did
a lot.
Biden. Yeah. This is not like a right or left issue. This is who's in charge. They're going to be making that decision. Did they have the right intel? Did they have the right people making sure it's done well?
Yeah. But, you know, just blow up that mountain. That's an assassination. That counts.
What, like in Mulan, where she shot the mountain and destroyed all the Huns?
Yeah. Except the one she was really needed to kill. But you know what? Spot.
Problem.
He was 5 feet in front of you.
Kill all of them except for the one that was really a problem. Kill all of the replaceable ones.
It worked. Eventually.
Less background characters.
Yeah. They didn't have names. They didn't have souls. They're fine. Anyways. So moving on from there. As mentioned before, like, one of the things they reveal in the games from the very beginning is that humanity is a kind of an uplifted race, as it were, by the precursors that came before us known as the Isu. And we learn that basically that means that every religion is a lie as a result of this, because humanity was not in this, like, there is no Adam and Eve. There is a literal Adam and Eve in the backstory, but it's going to be a human who was uplifted rather than one, you know, created from the dust by God. What does it mean for us that in the canon of the Assassin's Creed games, our religion is based on a great big lie, given what we learn about the Isu, how they uplifted humanity, and everything that comes with that?
Yeah. So, like, should we be enjoying Assassin's Creed as Christians?
Oh, that too. Yeah, we'll throw that one in there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fictional.
Well, I mean, the game's called Assassin's Creed. I mean, it's, you know, should a Christian be jumping into Assassin's Creed and just play a game where you're just mercilessly killing a bunch of people? And probably not the most healthy thing in the world, but morally, but
it's quick, relatively painless most of the time.
Yep.
Especially in Assassin's Creed 1, he was just knife throat.
Well, you're not allowed to kill civilians either.
Yeah.
And you
kill civilians, you lose.
That has since changed. It's a great way to keep your bounty up in later games.
Yeah.
So I may have indulged, but you know, they're not real. It's fine. But yeah, no, I get your point. Yeah. It's not real. This is not the story of our world. You know, if I were to place myself in that world and I'd learned all this, I probably would have ended up like an Alfred the Great. It's like, well, yeah, it's a lie, but this lie is far more enriching than anything else dreamt of by man. So I'm going to choose to follow this. You know, maybe Jesus in this timeline just used pieces of Eden to perform his miraculous works. But what did he use them to do? Like heal the sick and look after people. That's certainly very admirable. Who else would I want to follow? But yeah, obviously in that case, there would be no salvation. There would be nothing there. We're just some cosmic mistake. And there'd be the existential dread that would come from something like that. But yeah, it's just a game.
That's just
a game. Yeah. There's like some things like, yes, same thing in that timeline of, you know, whatever they call the aliens, the engineers, they made us in their image, just like God. And so, okay, so every religion is wrong. Whatever. Hollywood BS. It's this video game BS. Just accept it. Move on with your life. It's not actually what happened in reality.
Yeah. I mean, kind of like I just finished His Dark Materials, which is Philip Pullman, who is a renowned atheist, and he called it his anti-Narnia series. And he has the, you know, basically the church who follows the quote unquote authority as the bad guy. And it's, you know, just typical with a lot of media is they borrow all the cool stuff from Christianity, but then have like none of the Christian origins and stuff. And they change up stuff and then try to make the religion to be a false religion somehow in their canon somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. This isn't a salvific issue. If you're actually struggling with this, I mean, yeah, take some time, think about it, reflect, you know, ask around, have trusted people to talk to about this, but I don't think it's something to worry about. I don't think it's something, I mean, wrestle with it for sure. But don't let it beat you up. All right. So, gentlemen, do you have anything you'd like to discuss before we start wrapping things up and announce the bonus question we're going to be doing?
Really unfair for like all of the early assassins to have to get their ring finger cut off to use the hidden blade when they just stopped doing that. it was never really necessary. But yeah, shout out Altair, Ezio, Romulus, just, you know, the brave souls who willingly gave up their fingers for nothing.
Also, I wanted to briefly mention that Assassin's Creed, I mean, bear in mind, I'd never played Prince of Persia, didn't know it existed, introduced me to the whole, you know, running around, climbing objects, you know, and climbing buildings. So, like, kind of lickety split. The parkour, I feel like parkour kind of blossomed in the same era that the Assassin's Creed and Prince of Persia games came out, because they're just free running and you're jumping all over the place. And it was, mm-hmm. it was new to me in games like that. I mean, we played platformers, but not like realistic ones.
Yeah. Parkour is awesome.
Okay.
Well, with that in mind, we are going to be doing a special bonus question. That's going to be, what time period would we like to see the next Assassin's Creed game be in? And what should our protagonist be like? So if you're interested in that question, you want to hear what we have to say about it, you throw a little money our way, we're on fourth wall. You can look down at the link in the description down below, and that'll send you straight to where you need to go to sign up. We do have a free tier. So before we actually head that way, gentlemen, do you have a recommendation for the audience?
For the audience, I mean, Christian or not, I do recommend the His Dark Materials series as a, if you've read the books, it's faithful to the books. I mean, they do take a few liberties. It's HBO, but it's not as bad as Netflix taking liberties. It's a great series. It's endearing, good characters, great world building. And it, I was a little disappointed in the ending, but it was by the book. I was disappointed in the original ending. So it's not bad. It's a really good series to watch.
Yeah, I've recommended so many things over the years, but I don't think I've ever recommended a YouTube series. If you haven't, if you're not like a big YouTube person, there is one YouTube, you know, series that I do think you should check out if you care about, you know, celebrities or just like existential conversations. Last Meals with Josh Scherer and the Mythical Kitchen. Yeah, you know, it's like Good Mythical Morning's kitchen crew. They cook celebrities' last meals, all their favorite foods. They like ask them like, hey, what would you want your last meal to be? They cook all of it and they talk about death. And it's so good. They've had like Serge Tankian on there from System of a Down. Alona Maher just had an episode. She's the rugby player. Elizabeth Olsen just did one. Like it's crazy. So good. Such an interesting series to watch, and the food just looks delicious. Check that series out. It's good. It's really good.
Isn't that Rhett and Link?
Yeah, Rhett and Link, and they like hired a kitchen full of people, and it's the kitchen that does the last meals part. But they did also do an episode with Rhett and Link on Last Meals. So, but yeah, they are like affiliated.
Well, to go in a wildly different direction, I just saw Zootopia 2 not too long ago, and I love
it. Sweet.
I would even say it's better than the original. So I don't know if that's a hot take, but I had a ton of fun with it. I think their anti-racism message was a lot better this time around. Awesome. All right. So,
sweet.
Once again, if you want to support us, you can head over to Fourth Wall once again, or you can head that to that link down below through the Fourth Wall Systematic Ecology or the link down below. And you want to get shouted out on the show, if you're the $3 tier or above, like these people are, we'll say your names, like Russell Gentry, Justin Vaughn, Annette Noel, and Jeannie Mattingly. You guys are the best, but remember, we all are chosen people, a geekdom of priests. Hey guys, Christian here to talk about our YouTube page. That's where you can go find us at youtube.com/@systematicgeekology. We have exclusive stuff there, exclusive videos where you can just hear other topics that you'll never hear on the podcast proper. These include things like comic book catch up, where we're discussing the newest comics that we're reading, Friday Night Frights, where Joe Day and I explore a cryptozoological, paranormal, ufological item of discussion. Has a lot of good fun there. Have a lot of great times with him. We have spontaneous YouTube shorts that we decide to do, a topic we wanted to discuss. They're in a very short form. We do them there as well. You can interact with us live as we're recording like a What's New episode or something like that. You have something you want to chime in, Well, how can you do it unless you head over to youtube.com/@systematicgeekology. All right, guys. See ya.
Hi, friends. It's Laura here. And I just wanted to say thank you for listening to our show. Systematic Geekology is a part of a larger podcast network called the Anazal Podcast Network. Dummy for Theology is Joshua Noel's show discussing different theological topics from various perspectives and attempting to give people more questions than answers. My Seminary Life is Brandon Knight's show. It started as him going through what he was learning in seminary, and after he graduated, he's been doing independent studies and has a lot of fun series like on hermeneutics, Bonhoeffer Summer, and worship. And then Friday Night Frights is a monthly show with Christian Ashley and Joe Day. They have a vote on the Systematic Geekology Facebook group to choose a topic each month and discuss everything from cryptos to ghosts to aliens to serial killers and more. So we hope you'll give it a listen, and thanks for being part of what we're putting out there.